Welcome back to Page of the Wind, presents The Wise Man's Page, the daily podcast where we read a page of the wise man's sphere, and then we talk about it. This is page 83. Here, Elodin shoved robes into my arms until I couldn't hold any more. Some were everyday cotton, but others were fine linen or rich, soft velvet. He lay another half dozen robes over his own arm and carried them back into the sitting room. We passed old bookshelves lined with hundreds of books and a huge polished desk. One wall was taken up with a large stone fireplace big enough to roast a pig, though there was currently only a small fire smoldering there, keeping away the early autumn chill. Elodin lifted a crystal decanter off a table and went to stand in front of the fireplace. He dumped the robes he was carrying into my arms so I could barely see over the top of them. Delicately lifting the top off the decanter, he sipped at the contents and raised an eyebrow appreciatively, holding it up to the light. I decided to try again. "Master Elodin, why don't you want to teach me naming?" "That's the wrong question," he said, and upended the decanter onto smoldering coals in the fireplace. As the flames licked up hungrily, he took his armload of robes back and fed a velvet one slowly into the fire. It caught quickly, and when it was blazing away, he fed the others onto the fire in quick succession. The result was a great smoldering pile of cloth that sent thick smoke billowing up the chimney. "Try again." I couldn't help but ask the obvious. "Why are you burning your clothes?" "Nope, not even close to the right question," he said as he took more robes out of my arms and piled them into the fireplace. Then Elodin grabbed the handle for the flue and pulled it closed with a metallic clank. Great clouds of smoke began to pour into the room. Elodin coughed a bit, then stepped back and looked around in a vaguely satisfied way. I suddenly realized what was going on. "Oh God," I said, "whose rooms are these?" Elodin gave a satisfied nod. "Very good. I would also have accepted, 'Why don't you have a key for this room?' or 'What are we doing in here?'" He looked down at me, his eyes serious. "Doors are locked for a reason. People who don't have keys are supposed to stay out for a reason." He nudged the heap of smoldering cloth with one foot, as if reassuring himself it would stay in the fireplace. "You know you're clever. That's your weakness. You assume you know what you're getting into, but you don't." Elodin turned to look at me, his dark eyes serious. "You think you can trust me to teach you," he said. "You think I will keep you safe, but that is the worst sort of foolishness." That's the page. My name's Nick.
I'm Jordana.
I'm Jeremy.
What really jumps out to me on this page is what Elodin says about locked doors. Not just, you know, because
you suppose
they
might be
into.
Talking about a different door.
Yeah, there could be another door that Quoth is considering opening, but maybe shouldn't.
Is that door locked, or does it just not have a handle or a way that is obvious to open?
Is that
it?
Not the same as being locked? And I think, broadly speaking, that same metaphor applies to just about everything Quoth does. He's searching for the Chandrian and the Emir. Maybe the Chandrian and the Emir are secret for a reason and he doesn't understand. Maybe the act of finding them is itself a destructive act that he doesn't comprehend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Elodin talking about doors being locked for a reason is a case of the specific informing the general, because I do think that Elodin is talking about Hem's door, because spoiler alert, it's Hem's room, and he's also talking about the foreplay door. But I think that when he says, you know, you assume you know what you're getting into, but you don't, he's being general. He's like, I think he might even have some inkling that Quoth has an ulterior motive, that he like might be looking into the Chandrian and he's trying to warn him off.
At the very least, he's trying to get Elodin to teach him naming and doesn't understand why that's a bad idea.
Yeah, it's like Quoth just in general never knows. He thinks he's cleverer than he is. He thinks that cleverness will be enough. But then Elodin also gets very specific, because I think when he says, "You think I will keep you safe, but that's the worst sort of foolishness," I think he's thinking like, this has happened to me before. I have taught students who weren't ready to learn, or who I thought were ready and who turned out not to be, and it ended badly. And I'm trying to, like, as directly as I can, warn Quoth that, like, if you take my class, if you, like, try to learn from me, it'll go badly.
It's also a great bit of Socratic teaching. He brings him in here and says, "What question should you be asking?" And they have a nice dialogue until Quoth himself lands on the answer.
And, like,
hilarious.
Well, that's such a really funny turn. The line where he goes, where he suddenly realizes what was going on, like the whole scene turns on that moment. Because I seem to recall reading this and sort of being, I was in Quoth's position, like, what is Elendil doing here? And then being like, oh no.
And of course, all the clues are there if you care to look for them. You know, none of this stuff seems in character for Elendil.
Well, and he doesn't recognize the taste of the wine.
Exactly. Exactly. Ooh. And he's just been roasted by him. It's all there if you care to look for it. This is such a wonderful illustration of Quoth's tragic flaw. And this is one of the reasons I find Quoth such an interesting character. I say this over and over. If Quoth was just a perfect, clever, smart boy who was right all the time, it would be totally deadly. But because he's a perfect, clever, smart boy who is so clever that it's his undoing every single time and he never, never learns from it, that's great. That's a really interesting character, and it makes all of the other stuff palatable to me.
Yes.
Including being the very best at sex. And, you know, learning the secret arts of awesome women ninja powers that no outsiders are ever taught. Being given explicit instructions to conquer all women by a sex goddess. All of that stuff is okay because Quoth never learns his lesson. And that's great. That's a very relatable human flaw.
Well, and that's also what makes, that's, I think, what makes us, or at least Nick and I, and many of the other readers, count this book as a tragedy in, like, the classical sense, because a key ingredient of any good tragedy is that a character has a tragic flaw that is their undoing, right? That just, like, they can't get around.
I agree with these things. All of these things.
Yay!
Yay! Agreement!
For once, there is no conflict on Page of the Wind.
Weird.
Yes.
Before our remaining time on this Zoom call runs out, do you want to crack open a sweet, sweet letter?
Yes, we do have a letter. Let me crack open this bad boy.
And
this
suck
is from
the juices within.
Yes, this is from Bailey, son of Keith, who writes on page 37, fact and forward-looking comments. Dear readers, recently on page 37, Jeremy described one of the transporting agents as blank. While I agree it does have a fantasy feel to it, the description is pretty much an exact match for an actual acid that I learned about as a physics graduate student. We're going to learn a little bit more about hydrofluoric acid today, people.
Wow.
The description of the transporting agent is, quote, "There were transporting agents that would move through your skin without leaving a mark, then quietly eat the calcium out of your bones." A description of the actual effects of hydrofluoric acid, quote, "The fluoride anion that dissociates from its hydrogen counterpart readily absorbs through the skin and performs its damage on the inside, penetrating deep into body tissues, causing a systemic injury. The fluoride ion has an affinity for calcium and magnesium, two minerals that are essential for bodily health. As the fluoride binds with the calcium, it consumes the body's supply of this mineral in the blood and also attacks bone structure, forming calcium fluoride salts. As serum calcium levels are depleted in the blood, a condition known as hypocalcemia, organ failure, begins to occur. Heart function becomes erratic and can eventually fail, obviously resulting in death. An additional quirk of hydrofluoric acid is that dermal burns may not be readily noticed or painful, unlike the warning properties of other acids. Skin contact with hydrofluoric acid concentrations in the 20 to 50% range may not produce symptoms for 1 to 8 hours. With concentrations less than 20%, the latency period may be up to 24 hours. A solution of only 1 to 2% hydrofluoric acid exposed to greater than 10% of your body is fatal without medical attention. However, dermal burns are not likely immediate. It's also notable, this is so much fun for me, it's also noticeable that hydrofluoric acid can't be stored in regular glass containers and can become a gas and kill you that way. It attacks all silica-containing materials, including glass. It must be used and stored in polyethylene bottles and vessels. Bottles in storage of HF must have secure caps and lids that can provide a gas-tight seal to prevent escape of hydrogen fluoride gas. So, I find it every bit as scary as the alchemy described.
Oh, yeah.
On a related note for upcoming pages, during a recent reread, I got the feeling that Rothfuss was deliberately laying out the dangers of the university in these early chapters. Here we see dangers of alchemy and artificing. Then the Plumbob instrument clearly demonstrates the potential danger from deliberate misuse of alchemy. Quickly after that, we are told that sloppy sigildry is dangerous with the ice box. And then again, at the beginning of chapter 9, we get a reminder of artificing dangers during his admittance interview. I think this could be priming us to think about the dangers of what he's learning and the dangers that he isn't maybe thinking about. P.S. I want to float the idea of calling fans of the pod Eltha based on the fan theory that it means listener, as hinted by the emphasis on listening in Jax's story. Team Dead Sun, thanks for the podcast. Bailey, son of Keith.
Wow, Bailey, thank you so much for that letter. I now have a thing that will haunt my nightmares. Hydrofluoric acid, folks, it's not good. We hate to see it.
It's visible. It's everywhere.
Presumably when you encounter a chemist, always be very nice to your friends who are chemists, because you never know when they might dose you with hydrofluoric acid.
They have little bombules of it. They toss it at your feet and disappear in a cloud of vapor.
I also really like the idea, and I think that it is supported in the text, that Rothfuss is sort of subtly laying out the various dangerous things at the university, and maybe Quoth should be paying more attention to them, because maybe they're, you know, it's all going to go badly for him.
It's also another great example of him not really understanding what he's getting into.
Mm-hmm. Or like sort of blasely like ignoring it.
Yeah.
I have a thing.
Jordana, say your thing.
So I know you guys moved on from this, but I was like, where would you run into hydrofluoric acid? And you guys were like, a chemist. And then Jeff walked over and mouthed the word pools. I thought he said bowls, but it was pools. And I was like, what? Turns out, swimming pools. Hydrofluoric acid somewhere in there. Do you want to explain that?
Yes. Jeff, jump on and explain where you would find hydrofluoric acid. Welcome, Jordana's husband, Jeff, guest of the pod.
You use hydrofluoric acids to balance out the pH acid balance in pools. So if you put too much chlorine in, then you need to balance it with hydrofluoric
Interesting.
Acid.
Isn't it fascinating that
we put two different poisonous, like dangerous chemicals into our swimming pools?
Well, you know, sodium.
Because they're balanced.
Yeah, well. That's sodium is incredibly reactive. If you drop sodium into water, it explodes. And chlorine, of course, if you know, they used it as a gas to kill people in World War I. But when you combine them, you get sodium chloride, which we ingest in massive quantities. Delicious table salt. Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
You don't like table salt, Jeremy?
Jeremy, you love sodium.
I'm not eating anything ever again because I can't guarantee that it doesn't have hydrofluoric acid or sodium chloride in it.
You love sodium chloride.
No, don't. You can't take chips from me.
All right, let's wrap this one up. Thank you, Bailey. I really like your theories and your teaching us about hydrofluoric acid. And I'm really into the idea of calling our listeners Eltha. It might take some time to get used to it, but I'm here for it. And I also firmly believe that Eltha does mean listener. All right. Until next time. I've been Nick.
I'm always Jordana.
I'm Jeremy.
With our powers combined, we are Paige
of
the Wind.